watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Tonight, we're discussing the termination of the KL-Singapore high-speed rail project after governments of both countries said they could not come to an agreement. Now, what impact will the cancellation have at both ends of the track? Joining us from Singapore now, we have transport economist Walter Tissera. He's an associate professor of economics at the Singapore University of Social Sciences. Good evening, Walter. Now, did the news of the cancellation of the project come as a disappointment to you?
Yes, it definitely does. I mean, I think it's a disappointment to many of us in Singapore, and I suspect also to many people in Malaysia. I think it's a missed opportunity to really link our two economies and cities even further together.
Walter, you know, many critics of the project say that, in fact, it's not financially viable. And so I want to tap your expertise as a, you know, as a transport economist about the realities, the economics of high-speed rail trains. What needed to go into it to make it actually viable?
Well, high-speed rail actually has a sweet spot. That's to connect the big cities, which are maybe about 1 or 2 hours away by flight. So that's, you know, maybe about 300 kilometers, 500 kilometers, something like that. And in fact, Singapore and KL are really quite ideal for this because they're about that distance apart where high-speed rail is very competitive, in fact, superior to taking a flight. And so under those conditions, high-speed rail can take quite a lot of the business away from flying. And as long as the flight routes are profitable on those kinds of routes, there's no reason why high-speed rail can't get a large market share and also be profitable. You just have to look at where high-speed rail works elsewhere. It works in Europe. It works to connect major Chinese cities. It works to connect large Japanese cities. It would have probably worked to connect Singapore and KL as well.
So you
and
reckon that this would have been a financially viable project given the distance and the expected passenger load?
Yes, because I believe both governments did not intend to subsidize it on an ongoing basis. So they would have projected that it would have been able to cover costs at least from the international segment. Because the international segment, that's Singapore to KL, right? That's a very busy air route. We know lots of people are willing to pay for travel on that, including high-value business travelers. And so my expectation would be the combination of the leisure travelers and the business guys who'd probably be willing to pay more, that would have made it viable.
Can I ask you also about the economic multiplier effect of rail projects, like a high-speed rail project? Are those spin-off benefits real, or are they exaggerated or imagined?
Okay, so in the case of the Singapore KLHSR, I'm afraid the estimates of the potential multiplier effects, they haven't really been made public. But what we do know is HSR development around the world, when they are successful, when they have a large volume of passengers, they do help to bring the cities that connect closer together economically. And there's a reason why that's something that would have been useful for both Singapore and Malaysia. It's because KL and Singapore are not very big cities by global standards. And so the question is, how do we compete against the heavyweights? You know, how do we compete against London, New York, Tokyo, Jakarta, for example? And HSR would have helped both of us compete a lot better. And that's why I say it's kind of a lose-lose that we're not going to have it, you know?
Walter, your transport minister, Ong Ye Kung, explained the reason for the termination of the agreement in terms of asset code, that organizing principle for governance within the terms of the first iteration of the agreement. But, you know, the minister on this side of the causeway said that asset core would cost something to the project. That in fact, by removing asset core, there would be a saving of up to 30%. Does that make sense to you, that the explanation given by our minister about the nature of asset core?
Well, maybe let me first explain a bit about why asset core was important from the Singapore point of view, which of course might be different from the Malaysian. From our point of view, the key to this project is the KL-Singapore link. Of course, we understand Malaysia also wants the domestic link along the West Coast, but, you know, from Singapore's point of view, we really need the KL-Singapore link to work. And we needed the assurance that that link would be reliable and efficient. That's why we wanted this asset co-concept, because both countries would jointly appoint the asset co. It'd be responsible to both Singapore and Malaysia, and they would help assure, among other things, that the KL-Singapore link received the right priority, you see? Now, on this issue of the cost of asset co, I think, frankly, if you're looking to reduce costs in an HSR project, you can do that, but usually the way you reduce costs is you reduce some of the quality of the project, for example, the operating speed or something like that. But, you know, if you conduct international tender, there's really not that much way you can reduce costs if you have a certain high-performance design in mind, right? I mean, basically, these are international players, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Europeans. They're not going to be able to cut costs with you unless you tell them you want something of much lower performance. But again, I do not know what is the new plan that the Malaysian government has in mind for the HSR.
Understood. We're not asking you to guess the Malaysian government's mind. I think very few of us can. But I'm just wondering, in terms of a comparison to an international standard, what have other countries done when they build their HSR projects? Do they normally have an assets company? Do they work on both sides of, you know, wherever the track ends on different borders? What is done internationally?
So let me give you an example of how this problem comes about. It's the same problem in Europe, because in Europe, many countries have an HSR system. They run a domestic system, but they also run an international link. So you look at the United Kingdom and France. Mm-hmm. They run the Eurostar service, which runs between London and Paris. But of course, France also has their own domestic high-speed train service. So the problem they have to solve is this. When the train runs from London to Paris, it's going to share the line with the French service. And you need an operating system that gives each of these services the right priority. That's why you often find it useful to have an operating company which is jointly owned by the different countries, so that neither country has any reason to try to change the terms on the other, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So I'd say that the problem we were trying to solve with Asset Co is not different from the problems the Europeans have to solve when they run services from their own country in another European country. It's the same problem, really, and the structure we were hoping to use, it's not a new structure. It's
right.
Similar to the structures used in those countries.
Walter, very quick question for you. Was the HSR a victim of politics, the change of government in Malaysia multiple times, as opposed to a question of the pandemic and economic changes that had reshaped Malaysia's priorities?
You know, I'm not sure it would be that politically nice for me to comment on why the Malaysian government has decided to make this change. I mean, I think from Singapore's perspective, we recognize from the start that such a long-term project could involve some, you know, political and economic risk. And it's just unfortunate, you know, we just find it quite sad that in the end, some of those risks did materialize and we have to call it off.
Right.
So I think that's just unfortunate. But I don't think I want to speculate on, you know, the Malaysian reason for that.
Right. Well, Walter, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. It's been very informative. I appreciate your time. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. But stay tuned. Hi.
Abigail.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for following us on Twitter.
Thank you for doing
Thank
you for doing the show tonight. Is
yeah,
what
thank
he
you
wants
doing the
to
show.
Say.
Yeah.
No problem. Really, yes. Really happy to come back to Awani.
Excellent.
Okay. Wonderful. Okay.
thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation about the cancellation of the KL Singapore High Speed Rail project. Joining us on the line now, we have Transport and Rail Planner Wan Agil Wan Hassan, who's formerly the Head of Policy and Planning for SPAD's Group Operations, and he's also the Federal Territories Information Chief for UMNO Youth. Agil, good evening. Now, we have on one hand the UMNO Vice President Khalid Nordin criticising the current government over the cancellation of the project, saying that it was a demonstration of flip-flopping. On the other hand, we have Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, Tok Pa Mustafa Mohamad, saying that the cancellation is, quote, the best solution for Malaysia over concerns of long-term losses. Agil, who do you agree with in following the developments of this project?
Well, to be honest with you, I would see the cancellation of HSR will be a loss of opportunity for Malaysia. I think the main issue here is that we need more transparency of information. When Malaysia somehow says that the economic situations and the pandemic COVID-19 has caused the cancellation and there is a need for the government to look into cheaper options, on the other hand, Singapore said that there is a disagreement between Malaysia and Singapore on the decision for the asset group. So this is a situation that we face. And I believe the Malaysian demand more transparency of the information to really know what's going on and what's the main reason we cancel the HSR project for the country.
Oh, so let's talk about Asset Co for a second, because the Singapore government's point was governance issues, whereas the Malaysian government's position is cost, that somehow by removing Asset Co, you would get a savings of up to 30%, says Mustafa Mohamad, whereas on the Singapore side, it was just a question about safeguarding the interests of both stakeholders. What is the more persuasive argument about Asset Co? We seem to have lost one Agil. We're going to try. Could you repeat your answer?
To be honest with you, we really need to understand the main function and role of this asset group. So, in order for us to run this together with Singapore, of course, we need some sort of agreement between Singapore and Malaysia on the asset group decision. So, this is where I still need to understand more details. What it meant by Tok Pa when he said that the asset pool removal will give us more savings. In what sense? Because we are talking about knowledge transfer. We're talking about the new technology. We are talking about both Singapore and Malaysia has the right to decide who should participate in the project, who should come in and advise on the projects, and we are looking into the best practices, international standards. I think if we just rely on our country alone, of course, I can understand the predicament faced by the Singapore because they don't have any say about it. So we need to treat these G2G projects properly and carefully. There is a need. There is a need for us to be very, very diplomatic about this project.
Okay, Agil, I want to ask you: if you ask for more transparency and you want to see more transparency, projects like this have very little oversight. What is it that you want in terms of oversight and accountability at this point in time?
Well, let's start looking into the situation at the moment with the HSR. During the BN era, we have agreed with Singapore to run HSR from Singapore until KL, which served the needs of certain cities like Mua, in Negeri Sembilan Seremban, including into to Badan Malaysia. Now, we want to know if there is a plan for the government to switch it to become a domestic high-speed rail. Can we really afford it? When I say, can we really afford it, we need to look into the bigger picture. There is a double-track project going on now, and we are looking into a completion of this double-track project within 1 to 2 years. Will the change of ridership profile of this HSR cannibalize the ridership of the double-track in the future? Can we afford to have it cannibalized? That's number one. Number two, when they said that they want to look into, for example, studying about having KLIA as one of the stops, why we need to serve KLIA when we have Bandar Malaysia losing the opportunity to get the economic spillover from Singapore? So this kind of information, I think it is not out there for people to understand. And in fact, it needs to be discussed. It needs to be challenged. And we have the right to know more what's the government plan in order to have the high-speed rail to come into a domestic, you know, domestic context.
Right.
If not,
Madagil, if I could just interrupt you. Now, UMNO, Johor UMNO Youth Chief, Mohd Hairi Ahmad Saad, Shah said that that this cancellation was tantamount to killing the Johor economy. He said people had already purchased commercial lots and residences. And I wonder if a lot of the political considerations are colouring the way in which policymakers go about their work. Are they doing this to satisfy political constituencies, especially UMNO's political constituencies, rather than finding the best option in terms of transport and that domain of issues?
Well, to be honest with you, it is not fair for me to judge the cancellation of the HSR due to the political interest or not. But I think this is the weakness of the current government for being flip-flopping over the policy decision of the HSR. I think we need to be very clear on what we want to achieve with this project. When BN come up with this project, I think we have come up with a total plan that include on the TOD, on the economic spillover, which in fact influence people to make certain decision on asset purchasing and whatsoever. I think with this cancellation, when PH put the project under review, it already put people into a certain concerns over their purchase of the property. Now look at Bandar Malaysia. What will happen to Bandar Malaysia when we delay the project furthermore just to satisfy certain things? Just because we can't agree on certain things with Singapore, which I believe that the government has failed diplomatically to discuss on the asset co-positioning with Singapore. Like I said, it's not really, I can't really comment on the political influence, but I think it's a failure of the current government in the policy-making decision. I think that's very clear.
Okay, very quickly, Wanagil, what is the lesson to be learned from this episode?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, there is a need for us to have some sort of maturity when it comes to politics, of course. When there is a change of government, of course, certain governments have their own views and ways to do things. But we need to put the political interests aside and serve the administration, serve the rakyat, the same way how the previous government served. If the project really gives the benefit to the rakyat, of course, putting it under review is one area of things to do. But if it's really about erasing certain legacy and whatnot, I think we should condemn this. Continuing HSR is very important for the economic recovery of the country. Okay. If not, I think might as well we cancel it, focus on interstate train services and express buses where we are really lack of.
Agil, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. We really appreciate your time. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching and good night.